Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, what's up, Pels fans? I want to take a moment to tell you about our friend Ralph Malbro and Andrew Juge at Saints Happy Hour. Not only are they the podcast that Sean Payton hates, if you guys haven't heard that excerpt, you need to, but they cover the Saints with a perfect blend of sincerity and stupidity. God's honest truth. I love this podcast, you guys. I listen to every episode. It's honestly my favorite. I probably listen to 30 podcasts per week, and I never miss these guys. Not only because I love the New Orleans Saints, I had season tickets from 1991 to 2002. But honestly, these guys are just freaking hilarious. I podcast all the time, as you guys know, and I often lament that I'm not as funny as these guys. So make sure you download their podcast, Perfect Blend of Fun and Saints Coverage. Search Saints Happy Hour wherever you get your podcasts and let them know we sent you.
You are listening to The Bird Calls on the Armchair All-American Network. For more on your Pelicans, go to iTunes, search The Bird Calls, and subscribe today.
Fans, welcome to another episode of the Bird Calls podcast. We are now recording part two of our draft-centric pod. This one is going to be a bit more focused about the Pelicans and their specific needs. They're slated tied for the 12th and 13th position with the Sacramento Kings right now. So we're going to generally live in that hemisphere. Our guests, once again, Ben Pfeiffer at Ben_Pfeiffer_, Charlie Gonzalez at CWG the second. Ben, you are now a contributor to the Bird Rise. I think you have been for about 6 months. What made you want to start covering the Pelicans? How long have you been a Pelicans fan?
Okay, well, I am actually not a Pelicans fan. Yeah, I'm not a Pelicans fan. I am a Pacers fan, by the way. So, but I was looking to get into a different market, kind of looking towards the future. And I'm a big draft guy, and I just looked at it, like, as a team whose fan base, whose like overall goodness as a team was gonna grow exponentially over the next 3, 4, 5 years with, of course, them drafting arguably the best prospect of the last decade or two in number one overall in 2019 in Zion Williamson. So, I mean, I just looked at that as, like, that's a team that I want to be watching every night and writing about and covering. And it's been a blast for the first year. So I definitely think I made a good decision. And Pelicans fans have been very gracious, mostly, except for some specific takes I have that I won't go into because I don't want to get crucified today. But yeah, I'm... yes, I am a native of LA and a Pacers fan, so very out of place geographically and fan wise, but I definitely enjoy the Pelicans and I really enjoy covering them, and I have high hopes for the future. So,
well, I don't think we can get too mad at you for being a Pacers fan. Obviously, you've got the Holiday Boys out there, and it's a good team, fundamental team, not one of these Hollywood type teams that are always trying to steal our superstars, so to speak. Let's go ahead and shift over to Charlie. Charlie, on the last podcast, was talking about bodying up Greg Oden. Can you give us one more story of some notable athlete that we all know and love that you went head to head with, and how maybe you got the better of one of them on a possession?
Oh, gosh. The most obvious one that I've mentioned, at least to Preston in the past, and, you know, our David Fisher's favorite player is Rajon Rondo. Rondo and I grew up in the same neighborhood, playing against each other, played on the same AAU team back in high school. And, you know, we may or may not have taken a few games off of him in my high school days. And that may or may not have been due to, you know, his temperament. So, you know, I'll say that, we were able to take him down once or twice, as far as that goes. But definitely, I think that, you know, my Oden time was always the most impressive. I was able to play against that Spieth Indy Heat team which is a lot of people consider it like one of the best AAU teams of all time. The starting lineup was Greg Oden, Josh McRoberts, Eric Gordon, Daquan Cook, and Mike Conley.
Oh my God.
It was a really, it was a fun game. They beat the tar out of us to begin with. We got it closer, and then they just decided to play basketball again. And it was very, very over very fast. But that was fun. I got to see a lot, you know, playing on the AAU circuit growing up. And you know, some of those teams were a lot of fun. The Atlanta Celtics with Dwight Howard, Josh Smith, Randolph Morris, Sean Livingston, before he, you know, his knee exploded, was one of the most incredible players to watch, at least in high school. But so those are my war stories that are remotely worthwhile that any of the listeners might actually know.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. That's nothing to scoff at, especially Dwight Howard and Josh Smith. That sounds very formidable, especially when you're the one that has to occupy the paint with them at all times. That does not sound
like a great fun. Time. Not a great time. Lopez twins were probably the ones that were the least fun to ever, because those guys hurt.
Yeah, I will say that being an Orlando resident, as I am now, I see the Lopez twins all the time at the theme parks. Klay Thompson is also a diehard Harry Potter fan, but I see the Lopez twins at everything Star Wars related, probably once every couple of months. Of course, every time whenever they play here, but more often than that, they'll come down here in the off season. Those guys are super nerds. I would imagine at that point in time, they're probably into like wizards and Lord of the Rings and stuff, which I just think it's super cool when you see like 2 7-foot-2 guys trying to get onto Star Wars Path of the Jedi or whatever. Let's go ahead and talk basketball, talk the New Orleans Pelicans. Ben, we're going to start with you as we did on the last podcast. Of course, you guys remember Ben, in addition to his own podcast, Prep to Pro, he contributes for the Bird Rights, the Step Back, Rookie Wire. Our first question is from our good friend of the podcast. You may remember his voice on one of those hilarious, I can't remember what it was, one of those ads that, let's just say, helps your confidence. Waka Waka Wakanda. He says, whom should we draft? What do you think of, I cannot pronounce these, Sadiq Bey and Leandro Balmoro? Again, I don't watch college sports, so please forgive me. Ben, who do you think the Pelicans should take, and what do you think of those two prospects?
Well, all right. So we talked about this guy a little bit on the last podcast. Pelicans would look to be picking somewhere between like 12 and 14. My number one option is Tyrese Maxey, who I talked about last time, is a tier one type player for me. And if he falls, I don't care about fit. You have to take him. I think he's that good. The other guy who I would kind of be pounding the table for, who I know a lot of Pelicans people are also fans of, is Devin Vassell, a Florida State sophomore. Big fan of Devin Vassell, have been ever since last season, and he's really taken his game to a new step this year. This the best team defender in the draft, incredibly strong off-the-ball defender with his stunts and making rotations and playing at the nail. Not as great on the ball, but that's less important to me generally. And then offensively, has some questions about his decision-making and his burst getting to the rim. But I really do believe in his difficult shot-making. He shot like over 40% on long twos this year. So that's a nice sign for his shot-making upside. And I think besides being a guy who probably is a fine enough spot-up shooter, I think his passing is a little underrated. And I think he has some underrated difficult shot-making upside. So as a really excellent, like, 3-and-D plus wing, which like everyone's looking for nowadays, especially New Orleans, I think he's the guy I'd want to target. As for Sadiq Bey and Leandro Balmoro, start with Balmoro because I'm a big Balmoro fan. He's in my lottery. There's this 6'7" like point guard. I absolutely think he's a point guard. He's one of the best ball handlers in this class. Has some struggles like in traffic with stronger guys because he's not super strong or bursty, but incredible handling control, really gets to spots, and just a very good manipulative passer. He's great in the pick and roll. The jumper's definitely a question. The big questions with him are being that his frame and how he really scores in the half court, because his frame isn't great, and his jumper isn't spectacular. His form has improved recently. And then most of his games have come against like weak Spanish, like I think Spanish second or third division competition. Though when he does play up in the EuroLeague with the big Barcelona team, he is quite good. But yeah, and then defensively, he's a monster at the point of attack, incredible feet. And then team defense, he's smart too. So just as like a creator swing, I love his upside. Sadiq Bey, I'm not as high on. I have him like in like the late 30s. I'm really not a believer in him. Like his shooting is very good, no doubt. But I don't really have much belief in anything else. He can probably attack a closeout and make decisions, but he's really not super athletic and he can't create for himself. And then I have worries about his defense, both on and off the ball. And I think there are better options when it comes to like shooting type wings. So I would not be happy with Bay.
All right, Charlie, when we get to 12th or 13th, I know you would love for James Wiseman to fall. I don't think he'll make it quite that far. But just in terms of prospects that the Pelicans might be looking at 12 to 13, who do you think would the Pelicans would be best suited if they fell? And who do you think is just the best fit for the Pelicans?
Well, I really do. I like Onyeka Okongwu, the center. I call him a center from USC. He's a big guy. He can plug in as the, you know, a 4 or 5. I think he's got the versatility to be able to maneuver back and forth between positions. Again, we just Ben and I are on the same wavelength with Vassell and Maxey. I think those two would be excellent as far as plug and play, as well as being able to develop into something more. Those three, I think, are kind of in that range. Look like they could be picked up at that spot. And the other one, we've mentioned before is Denny Avdija. If he's hanging around, we know he's a Fletcher Mackel target. So that's definitely something to keep in mind for memes in the future. But I think that those kind of four players all kind of fit within what the Pels are looking for or could be looking for. I mean, I think that's the big question. We've got so many variables this offseason that they're going to have to address. I mean, we can expect to keep probably like 7 or 8 players on from the current roster. And I would say that you can almost, you know, write in stone the point guard, the starting point guard, small forward and power forward. But after that, it's going to kind of be up to what the front office really wants to prioritize as far as going trades, free agency, re-signing players. I think it's kind of all over the place.
Yeah, let's just get this out of the way, because obviously the Pelicans have 4 picks in this draft, in addition to the possibility of bringing over Didi Luzada on a portion of their mid-level exception. I can't remember his name, but somebody was brought over 2 years ago on about a 3-year, $4.8 million contract. I would anticipate that would be somewhere near the vicinity if they brought Didi over of what he would make. Right now, the Pelicans are 15 deep as far as the 2019-20 season goes. In terms of free agency, you've got Darius Miller, Jahlil Okafor. There's a team option on Miller that we would expect them to exercise because he is going to cost $7 million and the Pelicans are very tight with the cap. Then we've got Etuan Moore. We've got Derek Favors, who might be the only one of the group that we expect them to bring back. So not a lot of space. We don't anticipate the Pelicans being very active in free agency just because, like I said, they're not going to have any cap space. All they really have at their disposal is the mid-level exception. So if anything, you'd think they'd bring back Favors and then maybe bring back Kenrich Williams, Frank Jackson, and possibly add the remainder of some of these picks. And with that, we'll get back to Ben because we have a lot of questions. I'm going to try to get everybody's name. Play Zion at shooting guard. LOL, that handle. I'll get to these names in a second. Thank you guys for your question. But the question basically is, Ben, are you drafting if you are the Pelicans? And like I just said, they're probably going to be 11 deep before the draft even starts, before free agency starts. Are you going for best available player, or do you have even the inkling of who fits best in the back of your mind when you make this selection?
Yeah, I don't care about fit at this point. I'm just going straight BPA at this point for the Pelicans. Like you said, they have so many picks and so many players. I think I could see one and multiple being stashes. I'm very anti-selling second-round picks. I think that's generally just a bad move. So, I mean, I would trade or pick all of them. I wouldn't sell any of them. I think draft and stash is likely what you're going to see at least once or twice from New Orleans if they keep the picks. Yeah, at this point, I'm just looking at who are the values that are available to me at this point, like at that point in the draft. I mean, they have picks all over the second round. Maybe you consider fit a little more at the beginning of the second, but still, at this point, I'm going to be looking for values. And based on the way like a lot of boards and mocks are set up, it looks like there's going to be quite a bit of value in the early second range to exploit for New Orleans. So I think I'm just looking at the best guys available.
All right. Now, before we turn this over to Charlie, I just want to talk about some of the picks that the Pelicans do have in addition to their second round pick, which is going to fall, I'm guessing, around the same vicinity, like 45-ish. Then, of course, they have the pick from Milwaukee, which is probably going to be the dead last or somewhere near to it at 60th. And then they've got a pick from Washington, which, like Ben said, is going to be very early on in that second round. I think they're somewhere around the 8th, 9th range. So you're going to get that one pegged around like 38th. 39, which is kind of the vicinity where they got Cheick Diallo and Frank Jackson. If the Pelicans were to package their pick at around 44 plus the 38, 39, they might be able to move into that Frank Jackson, Cheick Diallo range. Let's go over to Charlie and we'll just kind of follow up on that. Obviously, when you're picking in a draft that's not that flush with talent, you want to pick the best available player. With that being said, where do you think are the Pelicans' two biggest needs right now throughout their roster?
Their biggest needs, in my opinion, I think would be getting some size on the back line. I think we saw it a lot throughout the season. You know, Favors is an excellent player, and I love him as much as the next fan does. But there was a lot of instances where he would get kind of bullied on the block by bigger players, and they were able to kind of keep him from being as effective around the rim. Because Favors, you know, he's only about 6'8", 6'9", and if he's going up against an Embiid or something like that, you know, there's only so much that you can do to be able to keep him away from the rim. And obviously, Jahlil Okafor has not really been any sort of detriment to anyone else scoring around the rim. And then Hayes just has a long way to go. So that just, I mean, I think that depends on how much you believe Jackson Hayes to be able to make as far as strides in the next year or so. Then besides that, I think we really needed a consistent backup point guard throughout the season. But as you know, Ben just said, you're looking constantly at the fact that a backup point guard seems to be a mostly attainable prospect, even though the Pels somehow really couldn't find a consistent replacement at that level. So I would target mostly either a big, strong wing, or a kind of potential high-end kind of center prospect that you could throw in there to eat some minutes against those monsters throughout the league. If you're going to keep Favors and keep him as your starting center, I think he needs someone that's going to be able to cover his back or give him just a little bit of a breather when he's going up against some of those giants.
All right, Ben, Charlie's making me a little bit nervous because he mentioned two needs the Pelicans have, and obviously I'm just teasing, but being the Pelicans' first round picks last year, the 8th and 16th overall picks, or maybe it was 17th overall pick, and Nickeil Alexander-Walker and Jackson Hayes. Obviously, Jackson Hayes had kind of a redshirt year. He was forced into action early because of injuries to both Zion and Derek Favors, and then as those guys returned to health, we saw him go back to the bench a little bit more alongside Jahlil Okafor. But in terms of the Pelicans' needs, how confident are you that Nickeil and Jackson Hayes are ready to contribute in their sophomore years?
I'd be more confident in Jackson, and that's why I'd be like pretty opposite of Charlie in being pretty anti-drafting a big high. One, I have a lot more confidence in Favors defending the interior. I just don't think post-defense is that important nowadays because, I mean, besides Jokic and Embiid, like, there really aren't any of those guys you really have to worry about consistently, except for that one time when Jahlil Okafor torched the Pistons, but luckily he's on the Pelican side, so... yeah, I mean,
that
I
one
have
game a year is really important.
Yeah,
you got to stop Jahlil that one time. Yeah,
we treasure it, and then yeah, but I mean, Jackson, like as someone who was pretty high on Jackson, he exceeded my expectations greatly last year. I mean, he was incredible around the rim as he was in college. I think defensively, he was pretty good as well, considering his age and his lack of like strength. He was really, really impressive as a rim protector and had some like impressive moments overall defensively. But yeah, strength is a big issue. But I think he was like, I'd call him like a close to positive player as a rookie last year. And I think he's going to be better than that next year. So I have like a pretty reasonable amount of confidence in Jackson Hayes being like a better NBA player, even better player NBA player than he was next year. And then, not Nickeil Alexander-Walker. I'm probably a little less confident in him, especially defensively. I have a lot of worries about him. And then offensively, I also worry about like the same things I worried about ranking him out of college, just his ability to create space and separation. And obviously his passing is very good, as you've seen throughout summer league he showed. And then throughout there were certain games, and there's a game early against Miami where he really showed his ability to pass the ball. But yeah, I have worries about his aptitude as like a point guard, a backup point guard, at least now. I think as he develops, he could definitely be a serviceable backup point guard type if his maybe the shot or the driving continues to improve. But he's the one I'm less confident in being like a really strong rotation player next year.
All right, we're going to follow that up with Ben. Before we do that, this is James Smith Jr. I kind of touched on what the Pelicans, what their flexibility is in free agency. Long story short, they don't have much room. They can add someone via the biannual exception, which is $3 million, which they're probably not going to do due to the uncertainty, plus their limited flexibility, plus pretty much every NBA player I would anticipate this offseason, just due to the shrinking numbers, unless they're like, this is their last chance at a big payday, they're probably going to take some form of a 1+1 deal, a 1 year guaranteed, and then a player option in the second year. So if the Pelicans do explore free agency, I would anticipate the only thing they do is replace Derek Favors with a mid-level exception. Or maybe a big wing who can kind of be an improvement over the Nicolo Melli position, but you're not getting a big ticket free agent. The most you're probably going to get is somebody around the 6 to maybe 10 million a year range. Although, like I said previously, I think that some of that money is going to go to Didi. Thank you, James, for that question. Okay, back to Ben. How would Didi rank in this draft class? We mentioned the need at backup point guard. Can Didi fit that? This is from Sam Wilcher.
I'll go with no. Didi's definitely not a point guard. he is an off-ball wing. In truth, which I think is probably a bigger need anyways. Guys who can defend, guys who can play that 3-and-D role, and Didi can do that. In terms of how he would rank, I ranked him in I believe I had him somewhere in the low 30s last year. I think he'd probably be in that similar range, if not a bit higher this season. As he wasn't that great this year with Sydney in the NBL. His jumper fell off quite a bit, which is disappointing. But still, I have confidence that he can get back to that level of shooter that he was in, I believe, the Brazilian league before he got drafted. And then just being the very good on and off ball defender that he is. So just like those 3-and-D plus wings are very scarce in this class. So he'd be a guy I'd definitely have in that like late first-ish range, I'd probably say. And someone who I'd be excited for the Pelicans to get in their development system.
All right. This one's going to be for Charlie, and I'm going to inject my two cents into this one as well. This is from Alexis Glozer. I hope I pronounced that right. I probably did. He said, not really on draft directly, but do you think we should try to keep Frank Jackson? He is not bad, but with many other guards, especially young ones on the roster and a draft heavy with guards in front of us, I fear maybe it's time to say goodbye. Now, here's my comment before I turn this over to Charlie. I don't think that we as fans can properly evaluate Frank Jackson via what he gave us on the court. His minutes were far too inconsistent. The way he was utilized was inconsistent. 2 minutes to end the second quarter, 3 minutes in the middle of the third quarter. A guy who's generally averaging anywhere from 3 to 8 minutes a night. We know how high the front office is on him. David Griffin took to Twitter to publicly defend him when one of the bloggers in New Orleans came after him. And in addition to that, Drew Holiday mentions him as a younger brother, mentioned on JJ Redick's podcast that he expects Frank Jackson to be good enough to replace him someday. Now you have your own opinion on that. That's totally fine. I'm just talking about in regards to how the front office and how the players feel about Frank. It's clear they are all very, very high on him. And he's going to be very, very cheap. He's not going to cost a lot of money. Teams aren't going to be falling over themselves to try to acquire him. So with that being said, Charlie, would you jettison Frank?
Well, I think that you kind of, there's a lot of polarization with Frank. I feel like there's almost a unified, like, love him or hate him kind of set that we've seen amongst the fandom. And I feel that he's kind of, his nebulous kind of in the middle area would lean more towards the jettisoning. Now, granted, I do think that given the situation with that we're all in with the financial ramifications that are going to impact the NBA, it might impact, well, I think it will impact his market, obviously, and probably will make him extremely affordable, just like you said, Preston. So if you really want to keep him as your kind of off guard defensive ace off the bench, it's possible. I don't think it's unreasonable. It just depends to me on where you kind of see. There is such a cluster within this roster right now of guards and guard forwards that really are going to need minutes. Like you said, it's not helping anybody if Frank's inconsistent and thrown out there just to be a pit bull every once in a while and shut down Derrick Rose, which he can do, but it just needs to be something where for him, I think if I was him as well, I would want something situation with a little more consistency and to be able to really kind of grow as a player. Because in the Pelicans right now, if they're going to plan on keeping Mikal Alexander-Walker and giving him more minutes next season, if they're planning on playing JJ and Rue and Josh Hart, you know, there's a lot of minutes to be eaten up just right there. And that's just going to be something where I think that Frank's not going to be able to really crack the rotation beyond being a specialist unless there's major injuries or something like that. So I would lean more towards jettisoning him for both himself and the team.
Yeah, I'll say just this and then we can move on from Frank. He's the only guy we've talked about for three questions now. Just in terms of Frank, he's probably a guy who's not going to get a lot of minutes next year again because, like you said, you've got Josh Hart, you've got J.J. Redick. But after that year, if Nickeil Alexander-Walker does not supplant him in the roster, this is a rotation player and he's going to be a very low-cost one. And don't evaluate him based on what you saw in 2019-2020 for all the reasons we specified earlier. Evaluate him on what you saw in what was essentially his rookie season, the latter half of 2018-19, when he was getting those consistent minutes alongside Jrue Holiday, when a lot of the guys were sitting towards the latter half of the season when after Anthony Davis was playing 20 minutes per game, Elfrid Payton missed a lot of time, et cetera, et cetera. In those instances, you did see that pit bull who could attack the basket, who could be a spot-up shooter from the corner. And that's all really that you're going to ask of Frank. You're not asking him to be a long-term starter, an all-star, just a low-cost eighth or ninth man in your rotation. And I do believe he can be that player in time. All right, back to Ben. We got a lot of questions on draft and stash from Exhibit C, AJ Valian, from Finn. We talked about those 3 second rounders. What are you doing with all of them, Ben?
Yeah, draft and stash is a big one. I'll talk about the first one. No matter what, I want, if I can get Desmond Bane, I want Desmond Bane. Desmond Bane, TCU senior wing, kind of like, talk about this a little bit on my podcast, but he's like the Terrence Davis of this draft. They're not in like play style, but in fact, they're both very good seniors that are going to fall inexplicably. That was obviously going to be good NBA players. And Desmond Bane, like 6'6", wing, really elite shooter with like pull-up shooting versatility, lots of range off movement, really great pick and roll passer as well, has some really, really impressive reads there. The issues with him are just not getting to the free throw line, like a sub 20 free throw rate, really, really unathletic on the drive, on his drive, but he's super strong and built like a truck. So he's a super weird athlete, weird frame, also like really short arms as well, and he's smart defensively. I love Desmond Bane. I mean there are people who are higher, but I have him in like the early 20s. I think he's better than two guys we talked about on this one. I think he's better than Aaron Nesmith, and I think he's better than Sadiq Bey, and those are two guys that are probably going to go in the lottery or the top 20. And Desmond Bane, someone you can get in the second round or maybe even later, as an undrafted guy, depending on what you look at. So he's someone who like I think every team should be looking for, especially New Orleans, that needs those wing type players. So he's like a crazy value and efficiency, and one that I would be all over. And then in terms of other picks, I think draft and stash is probably something you're going to want to look at. And there's going to be like a lot of there's going to be quite a few options depending on who stays in. I'll just throw out a guy who I've been watching recently that I'm a fan of, Abdoulaye Ndoye, I believe is how you say his name. He is a 22 or 23 old French wing, plays for Cholet, which was Killian Hayes' old team. He's just like a 6'7" wing with a 7'2" wingspan, really impressive passer at his size, makes pick and roll reads, is patient, just an impressive passer at that size is kind of the main offensive thing with him. And then he shot 75% from the line last couple of years, almost 40% from three. Not the best ball handler or the burstiest, but the passing of that size. And then defensively, just length is so disruptive, and he moves well for his size. Just a guy who's that big with that many skills is a guy who I'd love to draft and stash if possible, or maybe even bring over if we think he's ready.
Nice stuff. All right. We'll finish up with Charlie and then we'll get out of here. I lost where the question was, but I will find it in a second. Essentially, we know that this isn't the strongest draft. However, Charlie, if the Pelicans did want to move into the top five picks, they do have an interesting bit of trade bait. Obviously, David Griffin is going to want to negotiate with Jrue Holiday this summer. He is extension eligible. He can potentially opt out of the final year of his contract in the summer of 2021. So this is de facto his contract season. So if the Pelicans aren't able to hammer down something affordable with him long term, you know that Hart's going to be expensive, Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, the Pelicans are going to get very expensive very quickly. If the Pelicans can't come to reasonable terms with him prior to the draft, is there somebody in the top five you would warrant moving Jrue Holiday to go up and get, Charlie?
There is no one that I would move Jrue for. Not this, and it's not a Jrue overreaction as far as loving Jrue. That's purely, I don't see anyone within this draft that would both fit this roster as well as got enough high-level potential. I mean, for God's sakes, we already got Lonzo, so we don't necessarily need LaMelo. That's really as far as, and I'm right there with Ben on that. I feel like LaMelo's really the only prospect that comes in as a potential superstar as far for that level. I mean, there are some guys that get really highly touted. I'm not a big Anthony Edwards fan, and there's a lot of people that would probably move Jrue to get up and get him. I'm not a fan of what he brings to the table as far as getting the parameters of this roster, and I just think that with what they've got, if you wanted to move Jrue for the picks next year, that's more reasonable and much more effective. But I mean, you got to highlight the Golden State Warriors, who are obviously going to be looking to contend next season, and are they going to want to, you know, deal their top five pick? Is Jrue really worth giving the Warriors a chance at you know, an incredible defense for, you know, one of these guys? I don't think so.
All right. We also have the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Atlanta Hawks, who would probably like to add Jrue Holiday. Minnesota did a win now move, giving up their 2021 pick and that highly coveted draft you guys have been talking about for D'Angelo Russell. And then you've got the Atlanta Hawks, who probably wouldn't mind putting Jrue Holiday alongside Trae Young and bringing Kevin Porter off the bench. Probably pronounced that improperly. Let's go ahead and get out of here. Ben, talk a bit about more about what you do. Obviously, you're with the Step Back. You're with the Bird Rights. You've got your own podcast, Prep to Pro. What do you want our listeners to know about your work? And where can they find more exclusive content as to how you view this draft class?
I do a lot of things. I'll try and keep this quick. Like you said, most consistent, direct, in-depth way you'll find out of my draft opinions are by listening to Prep to Pro. That's you follow us on Twitter at Prep2ProPod, and then all of our links to the podcast on there, weekly episodes, good content, I think. At least I think. And then I do written draft content at the Step Back. I'll probably have some of the Bird Rights at some point. Some rookie content, Rookie Wire, working on like more like featurey type stories on draft prospects. So for that side of it. So lots of exciting content coming for me, hopefully in the near future.
All right. And we've also got Charlie Gonzalez. Follow him at CWG the second. He left his podcast microphone in storage. Why'd you do that, Charlie?
You know, sometimes you make decisions you regret, and and you live to see what happens afterwards. So, you know, I'm just going to thank Corona for my shoddy connection and audio.
Well, you still sound pretty good to me. I appreciate you guys so much. This was part two. Thank everybody for listening. Make sure that you share this with your friends. Rate it on your phone on iTunes. Grab somebody else's phone and rate it on theirs as well. We appreciate it so much. And of course, if you guys do have more questions, you want to follow up on something, remember Ben is at Ben_Pfeiffer_Charlie CWG the second. Go ahead and reach out to them. Get their thoughts on stuff. Get them to expand on stuff. They're happy to answer all of your questions. I am Preston Ellis on the Bird Rights right now. We've got my article on Derek Favors and Jrue Holiday, in addition to what may become of the Pelicans in the 2019-20 season. For now, thank you guys so much for listening. Let's dance and let's go Pels. Thank you. you for listening to The Bird Calls on the Armchair All-American Network. If you like what you're hearing, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes, retweet, share with your friends, and most importantly, subscribe today.